You're listening to the Live Out Loud podcast with River Wynn and Michelle Flamer.
Oh my goodness. Hi, River.
Hi, Michelle.
Oh my God. You guys were cracking me up in our pre-chat. I am crying over here.
I love it. I think it's going to be a great conversation.
Oh yeah. No, I'm so excited. Today's conversation is cool because it really is like surrounding a little bit of like growth mindset, trajectory, going back to like, you know, our, what people should be doing within the manifesting, dreaming, vision boarding, right? I mean, so what is the topic and who's in your car?
So today we're going to talk about manifesting, but in kind of the area of like career and jobs, changing careers, looking for the right job, manifesting the right job, aligning your soul purpose within your career, what you want to share with the world. And I think it's going to be a great chat because I think a lot of people are going through that right now. You know, you're on the job hunt right now and it's a pressing topic. So I'm excited about it. And then we also have my dear friend, Mary Horn, here with me in the car today. Right here. So Mary, you want to share about yourself with us?
Sure. I am Mary Horn. And how do I describe myself? I've been really working on not describing myself as my profession first. So I'm a huge lover of books. I read a ton. I enjoy RV traveling. And then on the side, I am, as my full-time career, I'm a financial advisor with my side hustle of creating intention and ritual products that feed the mind, body, and soul.
Love it.
But first and foremost, I love books.
Very much loves books.
And are you a fast reader like River is?
Yes.
And she has the cutest little dog on the world that she rescued.
Sarge.
Sarge, what kind of breed is he?
He is predominantly Shih Tzu, and we think he's mixed with Terrier. He really likes to chase things that are smaller than him. And that's a very Terrier trait.
Very much so. But the Shih Tzu makes him so cuddly and sweet.
Oh, and he's so soft, and he's got the fluffy tail, and then he's got the underbite, and he's freaking adorable.
I love Sarge.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Why isn't he here?
Well, he's at home because it's currently snowing in La Grande.
Amazing.
And we were at coffee before this. So right. We were recording in my car.
I know. I love that. It's actually snowing there right now?
Yes, it is. It is like blizzard status right now.
Whoa. Yeah, white out all around.
Wow. Yes. I thought it was light up there.
No, it can't decide what it wants to do.
Not today.
Last week it was like 60, and now it's blizzard.
It's so second.
Mary, I'm bringing you two back in. So Mary, what's your career trajectory? Okay, first of all, I like to go back to the way beginning. What did you want to be when you grew up?
For the longest time, I wanted to be an attorney or a doctor. And then I decided that medical school was going to be way too much time in college. So then I thought I'd be a lawyer. And actually, I didn't even know that financial advising was a career until I started working for a financial advisor.
Yeah, my brother is a financial advisor as well. And just like fell into it and loves it. Like it's like meant for you guys when you're in that zone.
Totally.
I, however, am farthest thing from a financial advisor.
Same.
That is literally one like vertical. I leave it to you professionals.
We all have our spaces and places where we need to be in society.
So tell us a little bit about your career, and River, I'm sure, will ask you some poignant questions.
Sure. So my career, as I mentioned, in the advising space started when I was working for another financial advisor. And after working for them for a couple of years, and after finishing my MBA, the opportunity was presented to me to become a financial advisor myself. So I took the test and embarked on that career. And this December, December of 2024, will be 10 years since I got licensed.
That's awesome. And,
I worked for a Fortune 500 investment firm for the better part of that decade. I was with them for I left in 2020. So it was 6 years, but I actually worked for them for those previous 2 years when I was the assistant. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, I left that firm and started my own independent firm.
Oh, and that's awesome.
Now I'm on my own. And it's been an interesting ride in a lot of ways. I really enjoy working with my clients. I really enjoy a lot of the people that I work with. I have learned a lot about myself through that whole entire time period. And I've learned a lot about people.
And I've gotten to watch that journey for you because it's 10 years of us being friends as well, because right around that same time is when we met. So I've gotten to see a little bit of the journey, but I would love for you to talk about, in your own words, like, why did you shift from the big company to doing it independently? What prompted that?
So for me, there were a lot of things that happened in those 6 years of my being an advisor that were really great about my relationship with the firm that I was with. There were also some things that didn't feel aligned for me personally in my value system. Not that they were unethical or being illegal or suspect in any way. It was just a misalignment of some values. And when the pandemic hit, it all kind of came to a head. And the topic for today is so perfect because the way that my transition happened could not be described any better than a mix of manifestation and alignment. Mm-hmm. And what I refer to as the puzzle pieces falling into place. Love that's something that I'm always looking for when things are coming up as a decision or a change or the next move. Mm-hmm. Does it feel like a puzzle piece fitting together? Because we've all done puzzles and we know what it feels like when a puzzle piece doesn't fit, even when it looks close, versus when it just slides right into place.
So I've asked my brother this regarding your clientele. Sure. And because a lot of times he's dealing with like millionaires and multi-millionaires and, you know, even above that, but it's fascinating to me. You know, I'll say like, well, are you just like shooting the shit with these people? And he's like, yeah, kinda. And I've asked him this question, but I'll ask it of you now. And is there any piece of advice that any of them said or a specific, like even a quote that kind of resonated with you or you've taken with you on your journey? Because I can imagine it's a wide variety of people, but in all sorts of phases of their own careers.
In a quote, in what way, like about their journey or their finances?
Anything, like if there's anything that they ever shared that you were like, ooh, I'm taking that one with me.
You know, interestingly, there isn't any one comment that stands out, as being, something that's resonated deeply. What I hear frequently, though, because of the way that I work with my clients, I hear frequently people say, the way that you talk about money, the way that you talk about your experiences and the relationship and the mindset with money and budgeting and all of that stuff, it feels accessible. It feels
that's a great compliment.
It truly is.
Yeah, because you're dumbing it down for them. They're saying it in a really kind, gracious way.
Yes, I'm using normal, what I refer to as normal people speak.
You're translating like the financial world language into their real everyday life.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One thing that does stand out to me is in relation to things that people have said is just how many people feel really uncomfortable with their relationship with money.
I was just about to ask this, like, why is it the boomer generation raising all these, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, and like, they're not passing down good habits. Like, it's so fascinating to me. So it's like, it's no wonder why we all have these like really weird stigmas around money and how it's looked upon.
Did your parents talk to you about money when you were a kid? Was it talked about?
No, it was talked about like in a way of like, hey, if you do something you love, don't worry about the money because the money will come, which is my mom's way of like, about really talking at our 10 and 11 year old kid self. Like, that's manifestation, basically. She taught me at that age. Yeah. It just kind of clicked in for me in this moment. My dad was more of the generation of 40 hours a week, 40 years work. You know what I mean? Like that. And that's because my grandparents, who are very much alive until their 90s, ruled that roost. And I think being Jewish and coming over and going through Ellis Island, and I mean, there's just a lot of like ancestral generational bullshit that's been laid upon us. And then I have friends who are millennials killing it, and they have like, and I'm like, how are you so good at like managing this? And she just looks at it as like points, like money is a game. So there's like so many unique ways that some people look at money. And I think if we're wanting to manifest that abundance, it, like, however abundance looks for everyone, for some people, it's like, I just want to do a job that feels authentic to my soul. That's abundance, right? Some other people are like, God, I just want to make enough to like pay all the bills, like just not worry about them every day, every month, and have some left over. Like, and then some people are like, I am literally working for vacations. Like, they have like, you know, I'm working for a new kitchen redo. You know what I mean? Like, they're working extra hard. So what is it with the whole, you know, because when we're talking about manifestation, I think it can stem from some childhood crap around money.
1,000%.
Okay.
In my experience.
Did you hear that, River? Not just 100%.
1,000%.
I'm Mary. Zero. I mean, this is a good day. This is a good day for me. I'm going to shut up now.
What I have observed in my decade plus working with people in this capacity is there is across generations a lot of trauma around money, particularly you talked about the boomer generation. Well, they were raised by the silent and greatest generations. And those generations experienced two world wars and the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl. And there was a lot of scarcity, like actual scarcity, that became internalized trauma that they then process or passed along because it was not processed to their kids. And then their kids, not to the same degree, behaved that same way with money, but the behaviors and the habits and the way that we looked at it, it's continued on through the generation. And I'm an elder millennial, and watching my parents deal with money and knowing that my grandmother on my mom's side in particular, she was born in 1929, and her parents were, her dad was a lumberjack. He did logging, and they lived in wall tents in the forest when she was a kid. And like, they literally didn't have anything. So then going again through that generation shift, my parents did not have great money habits themselves, and they're in their own way both working on that now, but that meant that going into adulthood, I also did not have great money habits. So a lot of what I counsel to now in my work is because of the deprogramming that I've been doing in relation to those mindsets and the trauma, the money related trauma and the scarcity trauma that has been passed down through generations. And it takes time, and it takes a lot of internal grace and looking around in the world. It takes grace for for that shift to happen, but man, it's so worth it to not be so scared of money and instead see it as a tool, or like you were describing, a game. Because when you're not afraid of it, when you're not afraid of it, you make different decisions.
Yeah, 100%. When you're also not coming from like a real desperate place.
Totally.
I mean, yeah. That there's that, you know, where they literally don't even have a chance to even become playful with it. It's still scraping to get by. 'Cause America, right? Like America, great. It's like, no, I'm sorry. There's a lot that needs to be, a lot that needs to get fixed before that. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the intro, the very first episode of, I think it's called The Newsroom. And it is the guy that played one of the uncles in Full House. I think that's who that was. Anyway, sure. It's The Newsroom. It's the very...
Oh, John Stamos or the other guy?
The other guy.
The dude who played Joey?
No, maybe. I'm going to have to look it up again. I'll send you the clip. Okay. But at the beginning of this very first episode of this series, which I'm still just so enamored of, they're giving a speech to this room, this auditorium, or not the presenters, but they're doing this big presentation, and they're asked a question. And one of the questions by a college girl was, what makes America great? And all of the other presenters were like, America's great because we do this, and America's great because we do this. And then they get to this guy, and the moderator's like, what do you think? Like, what makes America great? And he's like, America's not great. And then goes on like a 5-minute tirade about how ungreat, how far from great America is. And it is still, this clip lives rent free in my head because it is so brilliant. Because there are so many metrics by which we could measure where America is not this great place. It's great in a lot of ways, but there are a lot of other countries that are great in other ways.
Yeah. Hey, look, America is on more drugs than every other country on the globe. That should say something. Granted, our country is still, you know, what, a little over 200 and something years old. It's not even 300 years old yet.
Baby country.
It is. It's a baby country, which tells you the sweat, the anxiety, the fact that we only have two weeks off a year. You know, it's like, and everyone came from Europe to create this. Like, why didn't we get 6 weeks? It's like,
seriously.
New so, America.
Going back to like when you made the shift, Mary.
Yeah.
Because I kind of want to follow through on that. So you shifted from the big company to independent.
Yes.
And the puzzle pieces fall into place.
Oh, right. That was the question. Yeah. I don't think I answered that question. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. This is how we
Squirrels.
Do. This is how we do our podcast. We evolve, this is it. And then maybe one of us will bring it back to a question.
Like you just did.
Yep.
Great job.
But so when that happened, what was kind of the scene? Like, what manifested for you that the puzzle pieces fell into place?
So the pandemic officially started in March of 2020.
Yep.
And the month prior, my assistant had left to move closer to her family. And so my husband had been working part-time in my office and had stepped in to fill that void because I no longer had a full-time assistant. And one of the things that I lobbied for, especially once the pandemic like officially started and we were no longer to have in office meetings, and he was my full-time assistant. I asked my back office, because I was an employee of this firm. I was not independent. I was an employee. I asked my back office, can we give him a pay increase to what we would pay a normal BOA until I can hire someone, because the company that I worked for also put in place a hiring freeze. And as I mentioned before, there were other things that had happened over the years that I was like not entirely happy with, but it wasn't like a clinch point where I was like, I got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. They agreed to this pay increase And then, no joke, the day before it was supposed to take effect, they did a wage freeze. And I was furious because here is this person, regardless of their marital status to me, here is this person who is working full-time and making part-time wages for an indefinite amount of time because we didn't know how long the hiring freeze was going to be. We didn't know what was going to happen with the pandemic. And I was furious, like, how can you do that to somebody? You made this agreement, you made this promise. And I spoke with every possible person that I could between back office and at our regional level to try to get somebody to push it through. And at the end, they were like, no, sorry, there's nothing we can do. But they were still totally comfortable paying out bonuses to financial advisors. And I was like, you know what? This environment is this. It's gotten to the point where it's not just not aligned with my personal values. Now it just doesn't feel good in general. And so I, at that point, wasn't consciously.
It's slowly killing you.
Totally.
Yeah.
And by that point, I wasn't planning to leave. I wasn't planning to make any changes. I do listen to financial industry podcasts every so often.
Yeah.
A variety of topics because that's my primary profession. Mm-hmm. And I came across this podcast. It was a woman being interviewed by another industry professional, and she was the head of a recruiting firm for financial advisors. And it was a 2-hour podcast. So it took me forever to get through it because I only listened to this podcast in the car. And at the end of that podcast, where they were talking about the different structures of investment firms, and I finally had a very concise outline of the differences between what I worked in with my employee status versus independent versus registered investment advisor firms and everything in between. And I was stunned first that I had never explored what all of that meant, but also suddenly it felt like I didn't have to be in a space where the misalignment was still there. Mm-hmm. And so I called the firm and said, I just have some questions. And that was in May of 2020. And by end of August, I had left my big firm and started my own firm.
That's so freaking awesome.
It was wild.
You seized it.
Seriously. Yeah. But the way that it fell into place, like this podcast coming across my Spotify at the moment.
It was not a coincidence at all.
Not at all. Uh-uh. Not at all. The way that I interacted with the woman that I ended up working with to find the new firm that I partnered with, everything. Like it was a puzzle piece that led to me being able to put myself first in a way that I really had not in most of my adult life professionally. Like,
yeah, I'll tell you, I mean, I had my own consulting company for sales. I was a fractional sales director for 14 years, made more money than I had ever imagined in my life, honestly. So you did a great thing because the only people that tell you what you're worth now is you.
Yeah.
And that's really important. If anyone is thinking of going on their own, is like knowing their worth, and so that you're not working harder, you're working smarter. Right. Yeah. So I think that's super important. And at the end of the day, you're now like, it's a beautiful thing. You make your own schedule you have to pay your own insurance and everything else, but it's like there's always that give and take of every job.
And I will say, you know, as having been your friend for so long, the beautiful thing that I saw from the outside looking in was that this alignment happened, but then it also, like, that choice, that decision and that action happening also brought so much other things in your life into alignment, mm-hmm. because now you have the flexibility and the freedom to travel with your husband. And you guys do a lot of travel, a lot of travel.
That's awesome. I love all that.
Yeah. If I was with my old firm, there's no way that we would be able to travel the way that we do. Like, we just at the beginning of February came back from a month-long trip in our RV on what I learned from a travel blogger. Well, they have a YouTube channel, but they call it workcationing, where they're working.
Oh, I love that.
And vacationing. And so we can workcation anywhere. And we were gone for a month in January and missed the entire sub-zero mess that LeGrand turned into for a couple of weeks in the middle of January.
Okay, so next time you come down to Arizona, then we'll hang out up down here.
I would love that.
Yeah, I've been totally scouring RVs and stuff too. I just want to be able to like just go out in the middle of anywhere and just crash.
When you're ready, call me and we'll chat about RV things, because I'm also obsessed about RV things.
Like, me too. I have folders on Instagram, I have folders in Pinterest, like everywhere. How do you guys say Pinterest, by the way? Say Pinterest.
Pinterest. Like interest, but with a P. Pinterest.
Because I say Pinterest.
How do you say interest?
I guess I'm interested in something, but I always just said it. So I just was curious how you guys said it, because I got called out on it recently.
Interesting, Michelle. I also find that interesting.
Oh Lord. Okay, so on that whole job front thing, it's like I'm looking for a new gig right now, and it's the first time that I've ever sort of been unemployed and not stressed out. Like and I think it's because I'm not married any longer, because the pressure really came from that external person. And it's really fascinating or interesting or whatever.
Interesting.
You haven't caught it on the podcast before. My favorite word is interesting.
It is a really interesting word.
But evidently it's not her favorite word now. Tell her your favorite word right now.
Lens. The lens through which we view things.
Oh yeah.
The lens in which we see everything.
The lens is so interesting.
Oh my God.
My favorite is deprogram. Like I use deprogram constantly.
Ooh, I use pivot a lot too. I my career pivoted in 2020 because brick and mortar took a tank dive and I moved into e-commerce. Yeah. And now I'm like, and it's funny, I've been reading these articles on people all of a sudden needing to change jobs. Like they just feel it within. And it's because of the awakenings, like because you get the spiritual awakening and you're on a new journey, you're like, this doesn't feed my soul. Like, cause all I want to do is like feed my soul. And so now I'm having these like amazing interviews with these companies that are so in line for this next phase. Mm-hmm. And like, they're reaching out to me and we're having great conversations. And then I just saw another amazing nonprofit that I just sent an application to, because you just have to, until there's an offer, you got to keep it rolling. But it's so cool, because we were saying that it's no coincidence. And I think if someone is wanting to change their life for however, whether, and we always say it goes back to, you want to get, you know, like, leave a friend behind because you've outgrown them, get a divorce or break up, or, you know, or change careers, or, you know, retire. Like a whole other phase of that is like not to work any longer and to figure out like what your life looks like. But I think it's like people just have to be awakened, like just know enough that they're like, why do I keep thinking about this? That's the nudge.
Well, and, you know, astrologically, I was actually listening to a podcast this morning about the current astrology, just to bring that little factor in here. Like we, you know, Pluto just moved into Aquarius for a long time. And what's coming through with that is that people are waking up and realizing we're, especially Americans, we're no longer interested in trading our lives for money.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it feels purposeful and it feels good and it feels aligned. We're not interested in selling our souls anymore. And so I love for you, Michelle, that in this process, like it's so cool getting to like hear your process, you know, because we talk frequently is that you're approaching your job hunt from a place of not desperation, not scarcity, not
very intentional.
Very intentional, and you're allowing space for it to feel aligned. You're exploring it, and you're saying like, yeah, this feels good, but I'm also going to keep exploring it and just seeing what happens and being okay with that. And Mary,
yeah,
speak to that.
Well, I have a thought about what's related and in my observation, because in my profession, I see a lot of people that are in transition in a lot of different ways, particularly in the last years. And one of the things that I've noticed that is fueling, this is my opinion, notice is fueling the transitions are people giving themselves permission to not feel shame or guilt or responsibility or loyalty to spaces, people, environments, jobs, careers, whatever, that are no longer aligned. So for you, Michelle, I'm curious, what has your process looked like, thinking about historically up until this moment, that maybe not consciously, but also maybe consciously, where you've given yourself permission to not be or feel beholden to somebody else and their expectations of you?
Well, it was really just this last position. It's the first time in all my life working that I haven't woken up with just this zest for the day. Mm-hmm. So I've never had a Monday in my whole career. You know, I was a canine cop in the Air Force, woke up every day freaking jazz. I get to see my dog today, or, you know, I get to put on my BDUs. You know, all the way from when I was a lifeguard originally, like my first job, when I worked at the Gap, when I worked with Rockport Shoes, when I've said yes to so many things throughout my whole life. I used to warm up TV shows. I was a set medic on movies. Like, you know, it's fun. It's because I say yes to everything. So this last position really showed me, and it was really at this tail end of this 2-year journey that I've been on. And it's literally aligns exactly with everything else that, you know, I keep reading, you know, or send, you know, I send River stuff and we're like, you know, mind blown, because I'm literally on the same path as my, she just brought up astrology, as my planetary evolution is happening. It's like in real time, I'm seeing it all happen. But this time as unemployed, like, because I've only ever had to actually go have an interview in the last 3 years. I had my own business before. I never had to ask for work. It was just referrals. Cause I would be at 23 trade shows a year and I would meet so many people. I'm a queen of networking. The queen of referrals.
As a projector, 23 trade shows per year sounds exhausting.
Yeah, for me, like I would be like,
over here.
I'd be more energized at the end of the week than most people, but no, it's just,
I love
it's,
that for you.
Yeah, me too. So that's why it's even more important now, knowing that I'm a generator, that it has to be aligned within my gut. Like everything has to feel good. And I've always said this, but didn't know about human design 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but I just knew I was here to help people, whether it was to grow the organization, to help bring more knowledge through training of a product, because then that retailer could sell it better because I sold it really well in to their top salespeople who now, when they're on the floor, understood stuff. You know what I mean? Like, or whatever it was, it's just, I always just woke up with just such a zest and it just wasn't lighting me up right now and lighting me up at all. And so, I mean, I'm just really grateful for the company and they were really amazing. And I'm excited to find that next thing that really gets me jazzed.
Is aligned.
Yes.
I'd like to ask that same question of River.
Yeah.
Thinking about careers, jobs, transition spaces that you've been in, what led you to this space of letting go of any guilt or loyalty or responsibility?
That's like a fascinating question, because like Michelle, I have had such a vast spectrum of work, like occupation. Like, I have done it all. I've worked in the restaurant industry. I've worked in sales. You know, I owned a business. I've owned a business for the last 10 years. I've worked as a nanny. It's been all over the place, you know, mm-hmm. full spectrum. And I think really for me, being an entrepreneur just makes sense mm-hmm. in my brain.
Yeah.
But it's been a journey in that, because there was also a lot of shoulds in that and a lot of pressure in that.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a lot of late night conversations about this. You've seen my process. But really, I think the big piece for me in letting go of the shoulds was just really like the deprogramming that you were talking about. And it goes back to my family's history with money, my family's history with jobs and work. You know, both of my parents' families come from very conservative families. My dad's family is from the South. And, you know, you go to college, you have a good career, you work in that career for 40 plus years, you retire with them. Like,
exactly.
That's what you do. And it's so interesting because my daughter and I are having a conversation the other day, actually, where she told me that she was recounting to me how she had told her grandmother on her dad's side of the family that she wanted to be a waitress when she grew up. Because she thought that it was a fascinating job, because she was like, you get to talk to people.
I mean, all kinds
and
of people.
She's like, I love to talk to people, and like, you get to eat food. And to like my 9-year-old, like, that sounds like an amazing job, right? And her grandmother told her, well, I mean, that's not a very great job, but I guess if that's what you want to do, okay. As long as you're not like your mommy and you just make up your mind.
Oh.
And my jaw just dropped when she told me that, because I had heard that my entire life of being told, well, you just can't make up your mind. You can't make up your mind. And the reality is that I am so good at everything I do. I'm a fast learner. I love to learn, and I can pick up anything.
Mm-hmm.
I am a chameleon in the workforce. I've always been a great employee.
For better or for worse.
And I'm a great leader in every situation. So my response to her was, you know, your grandmother's right. Yeah, I do a lot of things, right? But that's because I'm good at a lot of things and I enjoy a lot of things, and that's okay. And if you decide to do that, that's perfectly okay too. And it was so cute because she goes, well, that's what I told grandma, that you were just good at so many things. And that's really cool because you're awesome.
The next generation.
Yeah.
They're going to be so much.
Well, no, but if she keeps saying the waitress thing, I'm thinking equals really flight attendant, so that mom has a free seat on those planes.
But, you know, it's really like letting go of that deprogramming, like breaking the generational bullshit around what you should do and what your life should look like. Right. And for so much of the past 10 years of owning a business, I was really trying to take all of those concepts I grew up in hearing of, you know, artists are not successful. Mm-hmm. Artists cannot make good money. Mm-hmm. If an artist makes a good money, it's because they've sold themselves out. Right. They're not following their true passion. So all the narratives I heard about money, artistry, my parents are both creatives who gave up on their creative lives because they couldn't, you know, quote unquote, make it. So I saw all of that. And so in the last year, really, I've had to really unpack that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, no. Artists can be highly successful.
100%.
And that's meant like looking for expanders in that, like,
sure.
Looking for artists who are highly successful and doing what lights their soul up.
Yeah.
I would also challenge, and this is something that I've been doing for myself a lot in the last few years, is when I hear for myself internally saying things like, such and such can't be successful, or what's another, people talking about like be real, mm-hmm. or be realistic, or those kinds of things. I find myself pausing and asking, what is success? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if you ask 10 different people what success means to them, mm-hmm. you're going to get 10 different mm-hmm. answers.
For sure.
Ask someone, what is reality to 10 different people?
Yeah.
If you ask that question, you're going to get 10 different answers about what is reality.
Yeah.
And so that's what I've been challenging myself mm. and hearing you say, like, artists can be successful. What's successful to you as one artist is going to be different from the next person. And that's the challenge, is asking myself in that moment with that word, what does that mean to me? And how can I find the path forward, or how can I make space for the path forward to come to me, going back to that manifesting alignment piece, how can I make space for that to arrive for what that definition means to me? And that's how I landed in being able to open my side business, is in that exploration. Because if I was still with my big firm, it would have never been possible.
Right.
But now I have this beautiful side business. I call it my joy business, where I create and I create for me and for others, but it's first for me. That would never have been possible if I'd stayed in that comfort zone. That would have never been possible if I hadn't started asking myself, what are my values? How do I align my life to my values?
Yeah.
How do I make space for what's possible here and in the future?
And in that, you really shifted from like this very big corporate company to smaller, feels good, aligned values, but then also opening your Soulpothecary, where it's very much just like fully aligned with you and your values. And for me, you know, I took a step back from my business earlier or at the end of 2023 and let go of the narratives that I should get a big girl job because I graduated from college last year.
Right.
I took a nanny job.
Yeah.
I feel wildly happy spending my days taking care of a little baby, making a stable income, but then
so cute.
So cute.
She is so stinking cute.
But then also like I get to create for me in a very aligned way. And I have found that more people are asking for what I do from an aligned space because of that.
No, 100%. It translates because it's your energetic joy that's being pushed out into the world now. You're not coming from trying to play catch up with some person you don't even know. You're like in that comparison mode. It's like you're just creating and pushing out from joy. And then people are attract. That's what attracts people.
We're letting go of the previous generation's environment of keeping up with the Joneses.
Yes. We don't give a shit anymore.
No, we're not trying to do what everybody else is doing.
I'm like, enjoy the mortgage on that 5,400 square foot house and enjoy the, like, I am so happy to downsize. I want to downsize more.
I'm like, if you can afford a house like that, I hope you can also afford a house here.
Seriously. That's so much.
No, thank you.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't need all that. Like, I don't care about that shit anymore. Like, I'm ready to downsize more and more.
Well, that comes back to what like your version of success is. Like your core, like Mary and I have been talking about this recently because like, I think I've shared on the podcast before. I can't remember if I have or not, but I have my four core values.
Yep.
I base all of my decisions off of.
Yeah.
And that is, does it give me freedom?
Yep.
Does it allow me to be creative? Does it give me luxury? And for me, luxury is, am I able to pay all my bills on time and then have some extra to go do fun things with my kids? Like luxury for me looks different than what it might for other people, but that feels good. And then the last one is connection. Is what I'm doing allowing me to feel deeply connected to the people I'm working with and the people in my life, because that matters to me. And so everything I do in my life goes back to those four core values. Yeah. If it's not feeling that, then I don't want it. I'm not going to.
Beautiful. So intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate you guys making time for us after your coffee date. And
I wish you were here on our coffee date.
I know. I'm coming up there soon. Don't worry. Like it's on the top of my head and I can't wait to come up there. But thank you both. This was fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary, for coming on.
Thanks, Mary.
This was so much fun. I had such a great time with
you. So you'll come back. We'll figure out some good financial stuff to talk about because we're coming into April, like around April tax season. Maybe we can talk about people manifesting or setting up, you know, certain things for themselves to like check off their list, you know, over the next 12 months, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's
what I'm thinking.
The money stuff is, I mean, what I do largely, what earns my keep, if you will, is managing people's money for and with them.
Totally.
What really feeds my soul in this space, though, is the education and the mindset and relationship work, because the investment stuff is everywhere. We have, as a society, been taught to keep our money private. Mm-hmm. And it's in keeping our money private that shame develops. I think it's Brené Brown that says shame festers in the dark.
Yeah.
And money is something that I see festering right now. So I would love to come and chat okay. with you all about you know, what it can look like and feel
mm-hmm.
in a different space. Yeah. And how can we remove or shift or pivot?
Yes.
Our
interesting relationships.
Well, we want it, but we want to understand it through a new lens. It's really right. important.
We need a deprogram.
That's right. Think our listeners enjoy some interesting deprogramming of their lenses.
I think if we made money fun, it would be so juicy, right?
Yes.
Juicy.
We're making money juicy up in here.
I don't know if we want moist money.
No. We don't do that word here. No. All right, girls, have a great one. Be careful in the snow up there.
Love you. Bye, friends.
Love you. Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode today, be sure to subscribe and share because what do we say, baby?
Sharing is caring.